I'm excited about this week's guest. This week we have Alexandra Sabalier, and I hope I enunciated that correctly. How did I do, Alexandra?
Sabalier is just fine.
All right, good. I butcher pronunciations. You would not believe it. I do these all-day webinars, and my wife just, she has a ball laughing at all the different names I mispronounced and just normal words. But nonetheless, we'll get into those a little bit later. I am fascinated because as we sit here today, I am in the Midwest in Kansas City where it is freezing. We have snow outside. We're in the middle of a snowstorm. But you are sitting in Berlin, Germany. It's the first time I've ever talked live with someone in Berlin. And so just tell me, what is life like right now in Berlin, Germany?
That's amazing. It's amazing to know what technology can do nowadays. Berlin is great. I mean, it's also cold. Unfortunately, we don't have any snow right now. But live here, it's great. I mean, we're in quarantine. I think the rest of the world can understand what we're going through.
Oh, yeah.
But it's great.
Now I am I'm from Kansas City, but we're going to talk about your experiences as an expat lawyer. I'm fascinated by what that means. A lawyer who specializes in expat type of legal scenarios. You know, American citizens living abroad. We're going to get there, but first I just have to know what it's like living in Germany. My last name is Oster. Now, they tell me that's a German name, and I have ancestors there in Germany. I think great-great-great-grandpa, something like that, came to America from Germany. What is life like? Do they really serve beer there at the McDonald's? what is it like?
Yeah, they do. They truly do serve beer everywhere, yes. And beer is cheaper than water here. It's crazy. And there's so many variations of beer. So the stereotype is not a lie. It is a real story.
You said beer is cheaper than water. How is that possible?
I don't know. We don't know. We are constantly asking ourselves, how do they even charge for the bottles? Because the bottles are crystal bottles and they're even more expensive than what the actual beer should be.
Okay.
So it's surprising, but it's true. They serve beer everywhere. And there are many variations of beers here. They're all very, very good quality. And Germany in general, it's an amazing country. Unfortunately, this year, because of the pandemic and other travel restrictions, we haven't been able to travel as much as we wanted. So we've only been in Berlin this year. But life in Berlin is amazing. The city, it's super energetic. There's a lot of people from all parts of the world. And it's a very international city. I mean, it's the capital of Germany, so you can find anything in here. And the lifestyle is very open. The people are very nice, they gave us a very warm welcome when we moved. I've been living here for 1.5 years.
Okay.
And my experience has been just tremendous.
So let's say your college friend flies out there to Germany to spend a weekend with you. Where are you going? Where are you taking this person in Berlin? Hey, you're going to say, hey, you're from America. You got to see this. What would that place be?
Wow, there are so many places in Berlin. I would first obviously take them to the Brandenburg Gate.
Okay.
Which is a historic, obviously, that's where everything happened with the World War II and so many important contents happened there. I will also take them to the TV Tower, which is the highest building in Berlin. It's a huge tower and has a restaurant that you can overlook the city
once you're
up there. Super nice, yes. I would also take them on a boat through the main river of Berlin to do a tour by water on the city. It's gorgeous. And to the Berlin Wall, I mean, that cannot be skipped.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So all those places are main touristic, but they are also very interesting because they have so much history.
Right.
So you're not wasting your time. You're learning while you visit. And they're also very impressive.
Now, we just obviously came through the Christmas and New Year's season. Mm-hmm. What was it like out there? Do they celebrate Christmas like we do? Did you notice anything different about how they celebrate the holidays?
Oh my God, they do go so big here with Christmas. They love Christmas, yes. This year, again, it was a little bit different because of all the restrictions. And it was kind of, you know, a little bit more sad than other years. We had the experience of comparing Christmas 2019 and the Christmas of this year, 2020. And in 2019, there were so many Christmas markets in every corner of the city. beautiful with like warm wine that they serve. It's called Glühwein.
Okay.
It's like a warm wine with cinnamon and orange and I don't know what else they put in there. I don't like it personally, but they go crazy about it. And they say it's delicious. So I'm going to give them credit for that because it's their thing.
Right. Now,
They serve everything and it's beautiful.
Now, did you notice a difference? Like here in America, you know, we are going to put our Christmas trees up. We're going to decorate them. We're going to light up the outside of our houses and put lights around our bushes and things like that. Is it the same over there? Did you notice any unique traditions that we as Americans might not be aware of that how they're celebrating Christmas?
Honestly, I think the main difference is how quiet and melancholic Christmas is in here. I think in the U.S. it's more of a cheerful celebration. And in here, I think they take it more as a reflective time. Because you see here, all the houses, they decorate all the houses. I mean, they love Christmas. So they put up the trees. Also, all their trees are natural. I think they're against fake trees.
Okay. All right.
So they have these huge vines everywhere. And they're all natural, and they look so impressive. They decorate them since, like, October, maybe. The last weeks of October,
really?
They're already decorated
October.
Everywhere. Yes.
I love it.
I know, me too, but they are so big on Christmas. It's very fun to be here while in this time. But main difference, I think it would be that. They celebrate Christmas much of family time, reflective more. You know, classical music, hot chocolate, and very, it's a cozy feeling, but also very, like, tranquility, I would say. The city takes kind of a melancholic feeling.
Okay.
You don't feel like it's a cheerful time all the time. You feel like it's more of a romantic and, you know,
interesting.
Sweet time. Yes, it feels the times go slower here in Christmas, I would say.
Now, I kind of see maybe I do have some Germanic roots because I like to celebrate Christmas all year long. I mean, I see these memes out there where people are insulting people who've seen Christmas carols in July. That's me. I am seeing Christmas carols all year long. And I, if it were up to me, I would leave the decorations up all year long. So, hey.
Those are your German roots right there.
I love it.
You can't deny them.
Now, in America, we have also Black Friday. I'm sure you're familiar with that, where you know, it's the first Friday after Thanksgiving, everyone is shopping for Christmas, and that's the hustle and bustle. Are you saying that's not present? It's more of a peaceful time over there in Germany? Do they have a Black Friday concept?
Well, you know, America has this big thing on selling their traditions. So it has already gotten here, the Black Friday tradition as well. But I think it's something new, so not a lot of people are into it yet. But it has definitely already caught up their attention. I mean, this year, most of the sales were cyber sales. So I would see a lot of advertising, since Black Friday this, Black Friday discounts and all of that. And this year it was maybe easier to sell the concept because a lot of people were looking to shop online and to get their orders on time.
Right.
And I saw a big movement here on Black Friday. And again, if I compare it to last year in 2019, I don't remember Black Friday last year. So I think this year really caught up their attention. Like, oh my God, I can get my Christmas shopping and all this so soon and with discounts. Amazing. So yes, I think it's getting here. The Black Friday tradition, too.
Now, what is it like living in Germany as an American? I mean, do people know you're an American? Is it obvious? What is the perception of America? I'm always curious about that because I haven't traveled overseas yet. And we have a somewhat of an egocentric view of ourselves, right? Like, we think we're the everyone cares about America. I'm just not sure that's true.
Yeah.
What is your perspective of being an American living in Germany about how they look at America?
Wow. Okay. There are so many things. They definitely know I'm not from here. I mean, I am from Puerto Rico, so I'm also not even from the U.S. mainland. But for sure, I mean, first thing is the language. They speak German here. And although I'm in Berlin and it's an international city, if you go to small places like the supermarket or to government offices, they expect you to speak German.
Okay.
And that is the first step. In which they notice, okay, this person is not German because they're not speaking German to me.
Good point.
Yeah, exactly. And very basic too, but it makes a huge difference. Yes, I would say the first thing is the language. Second, I think they also have a different way of like style, maybe, especially in Berlin. they dress up very casual all the time. They can wear, I don't know, sneakers to go to a fancy place. I would never wear maybe my sneakers. Yes, they are very casual and very practical.
Oh, I love that place already. I can definitely see my Germanic roots. I wear that. Casual is king for me.
So there you go. Yeah, they are keen on being comfortable, casual, and the most that they can use their clothes, the better. They don't go around wasting on new clothes or new trends or anything. You see here styles from the 90s. You see styles that look from other ages, from other countries, and nobody's surprised by it. Nobody really pays attention to what you're wearing or where it's from or anything. And I think that's very different from the U.S. because in the U.S., I think we all have a certain style.
Right, right.
And certain expectations of what to wear and where or when. And all those things, I think, were shocking to me at first, but now I see them and they're pretty normal. I mean, people here just dress up as whatever they want.
All right.
What else? I don't know. There are many, many, many differences. Even in the lifestyle here, people are very quiet in their houses. You don't hear anything from your neighbors. They're very, very to themselves.
Now we are about to go through the NFL playoffs, and my Kansas City Chiefs are one of the favorites to win the Super Bowl. And I'm just curious. Oh yeah, we are defending champions, and so we were excited. We're pumped. But how do the people over there in Germany? Do they follow the NFL? No. Does football register at all over there?
No, not at all. I mean, I don't hear anything about the NFL here. Maybe something from the NBA, but very minor. Yes, they are much bigger on football. And in football here, I mean soccer.
Right.
In the U.S., yes.
Right.
So they don't follow the NFL as much. I don't know why, honestly. I think it's because they don't have a team that is as big yet on that sport, and maybe that's why they don't follow it. But I swear I haven't heard anything from the championships or anything this year, so I'm sorry. I didn't know that your team was up there, but now I'm excited for you.
Hey, if I turned you into a Kansas City Chiefs fan, then this call has been a success. We're trying to get more people on our bandwagon, but all right, that is fascinating. Because we think of the Super Bowl as being something that people watch all over the world, but you're telling me not there in Germany, at least. So if I move to Germany, I'll have to, I guess, just get Yahoo TV or something where I can watch the Super Bowl.
And also, you have to think of the time difference. That makes it so much more complicated because, for example, my husband, he used to watch the NBA games when he was a teenager and all that stuff, and he used to stay awake in the middle of the night so that he could watch the games because they're at night in the U.S., so they're here maybe 3-4 in the morning.
Good point.
It's difficult to follow as well. Yes, that makes it more complicated.
All right, now we also obviously are going through globally the pandemic with COVID and the restrictions.
Yes.
How is that being lived out there in Germany? Are they shutting down businesses? Is everything staying open? I assume everyone is masked, but what is your perspective on how they are treating the pandemic there in Germany?
Okay, so my perspective here, it's very positive. I think they've handled it very professionally in the way that the government, they have really shown their leadership skills from the beginning. They took measures from the start. They didn't wait until anything got worse, or they didn't delay procedures or closing down anything. But what I do have to stress is that they also had the money to do it because they are right now paying 70% to businesses so that they close, and they're paying 70% of the revenue and income that they generated last year so that they can close this year without, you know, just shutting down their businesses and not having any money to sustain themselves.
Wait a second. They're paying businesses 70% of their revenue from last year can stay afloat this year.
Correct. So they are taking care of them very well.
How do they do that? Where do they get that money?
I don't know. Germany, they are very organized in here. The government, they have all these backup plans for everything. I mean, even when the pandemic started, they started opening up all these ICU care units that they had in the hospitals that were backup for any emergencies. I mean, nobody thought that a pandemic could happen, but they were already prepared for the worst case scenario. So when everything started, they started opening up all these rooms and all these equipment that they already had saved. And okay. So nothing really exploded on them, you know, without them being prepared. And now that they had to close down businesses for the winter because the virus just got out of control as soon as the weather started to cool down again.
Okay.
And people were starting to go out, but going into indoor places or, I don't know, opera concerts or the theaters because it's cold outside. They had to close down everything like 2 weeks afterwards. And they already had a plan. They already had money saved so that they could pay these businesses, the theaters, the artists, everyone in the city that has to close down. As I said, they are getting paid 70% of what they did last year.
Now, is that, you said the businesses are being paid. What about the individuals?
Even the hotels. Yes, I mean, if the individuals are working for the businesses, they have to pay their salaries from the money that they're receiving.
Okay, now I know from...
To the employees.
I know from going to your website that you obviously are you keep up to date with the stimulus package here in the United States, and you offer advice to lawyers on that. So over there in Germany, is there something similar where their stimulus checks are going directly to the taxpayer, or is all of the stimulus checks, if you will, going to businesses and they're telling businesses you got to keep people employed if you want to keep receiving this money?
I mean, it depends on what business it is, because I know that, for example, artists or opera singers are receiving their payments from the theater that they work or the contractors that they already have. And in businesses, the same thing is happening. It depends what contract they have with the business. For example, if I'm an employee from a restaurant and I am working part-time, they have something here that covers the employer has to pay half of it and the government will pay the other half of the salary of the employee.
I got you.
But that employee has to be working at least part-time. And if the employee is not working at all, what I think that they're doing is that they're just paying the business because the business is completely shut down. And then the business has to take care of their employees because they are getting paid. They are not, you know, just waiting to open again. Right, so now, that money they have to really restore. Yeah.
Now, I want to get into your legal experience. But before we get there, I just have to know, you are an American living in Germany. Have you gotten a feel for how Germans think of President Trump? I'm just fascinated to see how the outside world views America with the idea of we elected a reality TV star to be a president. You got a sense of how Germans think of America through that in the context of President Trump?
Okay, so I like to be very objective in this subject because I don't necessarily like all his policies. So if it was for me, I would say, okay, that person is not someone that the rest of the world thinks highly of. But I've kept myself open to all perspectives. And the truth is that there is a minor group here in Germany that actually supports the President Trump and the policies that he's enforced.
Okay.
It's very minor. And the entire, I would say, maybe 80% of the society in Germany looks down on them. Because these are the so-called right wings. And in Germany, there is a big, big, how do I say it? Like a big resentment towards the right movements because of the past history that they've had with right movements.
Interesting.
Yes. So there is a big no to those groups, but there is a minor group. And even during the summer when there was more shops open and there was more movements out in the streets because the COVID pandemic was a little bit more controlled, there were big protests in the city of big groups of people that came from all over the country supporting President Donald Trump.
Really?
And going against the government in Germany and all the restrictions that they were already imposing.
Interesting.
So,
yes.
But I have to say, the truth is that the majority of the country is completely against it. They look down on the U.S. for choosing that type of person to be president. It's kind of ridicule for them that is a president or a politician or, you know, that position. And it's frowned upon. I mean,
it's
sometimes a subject of, you know, jokes and stuff like that. It's sensitive because I have to say that there's a small group of people here that support him and that don't see it as anything negative, but the big majority of the society do not and are very, very much against it.
So again, was Germany following the American presidential election?
Yes. Oh, my God, yes.
Really?
Yes. In here, it was even crazier because during the times that, I don't know if you remember, but there was a big shock and protest in the U.S. because during the nighttime in the U.S., there were a lot of votes counted.
Right.
But nighttime in the U.S. meant that it was the morning here in Germany.
Okay.
So, for example, my husband and I, we were watching the news every single day, and those hours were the most drastic and dramatic because that's where most of the votes came in, and we saw how much impact they were making and how much the numbers were changing, and the states kept getting more votes in. So when I saw my friends or people on my social networks and all that saying, oh, my God, all these things happened while we were sleeping, we couldn't see it, I was like, no, I could see it. I know how it happened. And nothing strange happened. They were counting them in. I mean, these people are working long hours to get these votes counted.
I agree with your friends.
Said. Yes.
I fell asleep. I stayed up till like 11, maybe midnight. I said, I've had it. I'm going to bed. So you stayed up.
I was waking up. Yeah. At that time, I was waking up and I could see what you couldn't see while you were sleeping.
All right.
And yeah. But we were all following it. I mean, even from my husband's company, he works up for a German company.
Okay.
And all his colleagues, I mean, there was even a big campaign for the U.S. elections in his company. They sold merchandise and all of that. So they were campaigning for the U.S. elections from Germany. And yeah, it was a crazy week for all of us. I think the whole world was watching.
Fascinating.
Regardless of the country, yes.
That's
one thing we follow. Maybe not the NFL, but
that's going to be my
US
point.
Elections for sure.
Maybe instead of watching our elections, you should watch our NFL product. It's a much better product.
Right?
I'm telling you, you'd be excited to
more
see.
More fun.
Exactly. Well, okay. Well, now you are an expat lawyer. I want to get to what that means in just a bit. But first of all, I want to know you individually. Why did you choose to become a lawyer, and when did you realize that you wanted to go to law school and become a lawyer?
Okay, so this happened when I was maybe 19. It was in my second year of college, and I was studying communications. I wanted to be a broadcast journalist.
All right.
But I kept going to my classes and being so unmotivated. All the classes seemed so superficial to me. Honestly, I remember thinking like, oh, my God, I don't even want to be in college. This is just nothing. Seriously, because I don't know what the experience of other people were, but my high school was so difficult. My subject, the reading was intense. I had so much work to do all the time. And once I got to college, I felt like everything was, I don't know if it was because I was studying communications, probably.
Right.
But I felt like everything was so easy and not too much work. Like the reading was so obvious. And I was like, no, this is not, you know, I don't like this. And I thought it was college. I felt that college just was not for me, maybe. But quitting college was not an option. I mean, my parents would have lost it. So I kept on going to my classes and I kept on trying to figure out what I liked. And I signed up for a philosophy class. It was like a legal philosophy class, something related to legal systems of the past. And in that class, I remember I started to get so interested. Like all the reading seemed challenging and difficult and kind of, you know, I had to analyze and all that stuff. And I was like, I really like this.
Right.
So I spoke with my counselor. And I asked her, I was like, I like this class and I would like to know what do I have to study so that I can continue taking classes like this one. And she told me, okay, this class is part of our pre-law major. So maybe you're into law, you're not into communications.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, okay, so that's something I can do. And what I did, I couldn't sign up for pre-law anymore because I would have lost all my credits for communications. And I was already in my second year because the classes didn't have anything to do. So I wouldn't have gotten credited for any. And what she told me is that I could do a minor, continue my communications major and do a minor in something related with law. So I did a minor in criminal justice.
Okay.
And I graduated with that major in communications and minor in criminal justice. But with the plan of, okay, when I graduate, I'm going to continue to law school because that's what I want to study.
Now, I got to tell you,
it's all thanks to that class.
I think I had to I disagree with your advisor a little bit. I think journalism is the perfect prerequisite for law school. I can't think of a better major to prepare one for law school.
Yeah, it's helped me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean,
true. It's helped me tremendously, yeah.
And I'm just thinking of the big journalist here in America, let's say Ben Shapiro, Laura Ingraham.
Yes.
They're all lawyers.
Mm-hmm.
That's
true.
And so maybe your two courses of training are kind of leading you down to an amazing future. But I see both of those being one and the same, at least involving the same skill set. So you want
for
to go-
sure they've helped me so much, especially in trials. I mean, all my courses on communications when I studied my major, they helped me. Oh my God, tremendously.
Right.
So I'm thankful that I finished that career and then went on to law school. But it was like that I discovered my passion for law.
Now, what particular thing about the legal profession attracted you?
It's difficult because the legal profession and the legal studies are so different.
Right.
So I think that when I studied law, I didn't know what I was getting myself into.
That is very true.
I just know that my first week of law school, I kept going to my classes and I kept thinking, okay, when is class actually going to start? Because I was enjoying it so much. I was enjoying all the conversations, all the readings, all our class discussions. And I was like, okay, this is the first week of law school. This is supposed to be hard and challenging. When are we going to start, on the real work?
Right.
But it ended up being just like that. And it ended up being difficult, of course, but enjoyable for me because I actually loved what I was studying and what I was doing. And all my research work, all my readings, my drafts, they were absolutely amazing for me. But I think that what attracted me most to it was that I always, always, always wanted to, I mean, this sounds so cliche, but it's true. I always wanted to do an impact in my community. Like, I always felt like I wanted to help people out in a meaningful way, not just help them with some food on Fridays, but really help them get justice to their situations and stuff like this. And I remember that when I graduated from college, I went back to Puerto Rico because I studied in Puerto Rico for law school in a program that they opened that was for federal law. So I studied in Puerto Rico, but it was a course that they opened that it was planned and credited like it was in the U.S. So it's a perfect balance for me.
Interesting.
And yes, it was amazing. They opened it. I think they closed it this year, but they're opening it up again next year because of the pandemic. But the point is that when I went back, I started looking for all these organizations that offered legal help to disadvantaged communities and all of that. And I started calling, and I remember one of them, I called and I said my number, my name, and all of that. And they said, oh, you called. And I said, when? And they're like, 3 years ago.
Really?
Yeah. So I was already, when I was in college, that I was in Florida, maybe one of the summers that I was visiting Puerto Rico, I called to also work for that legal organization. And I wasn't even a law school student yet. So I was like, oh my God. So this means that I've been really into this for years.
That's interesting.
It's amazing. Yeah.
Interesting. All right. So now I will tell you, when you tell me that you were a journalist or you had some journalism training, it all kind of makes sense to me now. Because when I went to your website and I went through your various blogs that you've written about any kind of legal issue when it comes to expat law, I thought, wow, this is a really good website. I mean, she is clear. These articles are very much make a lot of sense. And now it all kind of comes together. It's because of your journalism training. That's why your website is so easily to read and go through. All right. Now I want to get to where you are now of being an expat law, but you're in law school. So you're telling me this story. Was it in law school where you decided you wanted to have an international practice helping expats, or is that something that just came to be as life's doors opened?
Not at all. Okay. I always wanted to be into international something. I mean, I didn't know if it was law. I didn't know if I want to be a diplomat or I don't know. I just knew that I wanted to work in the international field. But when I started, I think I started with the idea that I wanted to be a human rights lawyer and change the world and all of that. I mean, I think a lot of law students start like that.
Right.
And that's obviously not something that I've already quit or anything, but it's something that's definitely on the side right now because I'm focusing on this part of the community, the expat community. But I decided that I wanted to be an expat lawyer when I graduated. I think that once you're in law school, yes. I mean, I don't know what the experience of other lawyers are on this, but once you're in law school, you have so many things to figure out that I couldn't decide what field I wanted to work on or specialize in. I did everything. I tried to sign up for all kinds of practices, internships, legal volunteer work, everything to figure out what I really liked. I found out that I loved immigration and I loved family law.
Now, was it the subject matter or was it the fact you wanted to live overseas or was it a little bit of both? Well, what led you to that area of law?
So what led me to it, it was that my husband, he is from Spain.
Okay.
So we already had like an international relationship. And
right.
Once I was going to graduate, we were going to get married and we were trying to figure out where to live and all that. And I couldn't find a lawyer that could help me with this issue. I couldn't find any resources. And I was like, there must be some type of professional that can help us decide, you know, what country is better for us tax wise, because we wanted to work in so many different things. My husband, he's an engineer, but he works in programming.
Okay.
So he can work anywhere. He
can work
remotely from anywhere. That wasn't a problem for us. And I am a lawyer. So to me, it was a matter of where is it going to be better for me to practice law? If I am an American licensed lawyer, where can I practice? Where can I do? And there was no one that could help me with this. And so we decided to just move to Germany because of his work. They offered us a really good opportunity to both of us. And once I was here, I was looking for jobs and I couldn't find anything that really called me. And again, I thought, okay, there must be someone that can help me. I also found out that I had to file my taxes in the United States, even if I live here in Germany. So every American citizen out there in the world know this. You have to file your taxes in the United States. It's required by law.
That's the worst news I've heard today.
I'm sorry, but it's true. And you can get in a big, big trouble if you don't do it.
Okay, so what kind of trouble could you get into?
So many. It depends on what your financial situation is and what is required from you, depending on your finances abroad. But generally, what the U.S. government doesn't want you to do is to move abroad so that you can generate all the income that you can and hide it from them.
Makes sense.
Because you are retaining your U.S. citizenship and the U.S. has a citizenship-based tax system. So if you want to keep your U.S. citizenship and pass it on to your children and enter the U.S. whenever you want and all of that, you have to file your taxes in the U.S. and report everything that you're generating abroad. So if you have properties, if you have bank accounts, if you have businesses, everything.
Okay.
Also, if you have more than $10,000 in your bank account abroad, you have to file a different document, which is called an FBAR, to the Department of Treasury so that you report that you have more than that threshold abroad. There are so many requirements. I mean, it all depends on your specific situation.
Right, right.
And in general, the more that you have, the more that you're required to file.
So, now again, it might be that this is such a general question you can't even answer it, but let's say you are an American citizen living overseas, and I don't even know a country to pick, but let's just pick Germany, since you might know German law.
Yes.
And I make $100,000 in Germany. Do I have to pay U.S. income tax on that $100,000, or do I get a credit for what I paid to Germany for that $100,000? I assume you got to pay tax in Germany as well.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. So generally, that's what you would pay German first, and then also report to the United States, and maybe there's an offset or credit that would apply to your U.S. taxes.
Correct. You have it just right. If you live, let's say, in Germany, and you have an income of $100,000, you would pay your taxes in Germany because Germany has a residence-based tax system. So if you're a resident of Germany, you pay taxes here in Germany. And what you would end up doing is file your taxes in the United States. Not necessarily. I mean, people get confused with filing and paying. They get scared. Oh, my God, I have to file taxes in the U.S. That means I have to pay taxes in the U.S. But that's not always the case. Most of the times, what you have to do is file your taxes in the United States after you have paid and filed your taxes in Germany.
Okay.
And claim a credit in the United States for the taxes that you have already paid in Germany. or right. in whatever your country of residence is.
So, that makes,
so you would not end up paying taxes also in the U.S.
So we're familiar with that concept a little bit, because if you live in one state here in the United States, like you live in Kansas, but you did work mm-hmm. in Tennessee, let's say, then you would pay taxes in Tennessee and Kansas, but then there's credits, because you're not really paying tax twice. In a, exactly. in a gross generalization, you're just basically paying the highest tax rate, you know, whatever exactly. it is. But yeah. I know it's a gross generalization. All right, let's look at penalties. Again, just generally, I'm not talking specifics, but let's say you mm-hmm. don't file your taxes in America and you live somewhere else, like in Germany. Is it going to be where you can't travel back to the United States, or would it be a crime? Hey, you didn't file your taxes, so the same crimes that would apply in America for failing to pay your taxes or file your taxes would apply?
Well, yes. I mean, it is like a lottery, because obviously if you're living abroad, it's much more difficult for the U.S. to keep control of every single American citizen that is right. in another country. Also, there's less access to the information, although the U.S. has treaties with these countries everywhere in the world and whenever you open a bank account abroad, that bank has to send a statement to the United States notifying that a U.S. citizen has opened bank account in their country. So you're pretty much caught there. But if they don't really investigate on you, you may get off the hook if you don't do anything. But if you do get audited or you get investigated and you're caught with your income in the country abroad and properties, businesses, all of that, the penalties can be from $10,000 each year that you didn't comply, yes, to a percentage of what you already have, which can result in hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars.
Right.
So it's not worth it. You can also lose your passport when you're abroad. They can contact the U.S. agency so that your passport is revoked until you settle your tax accounts with the IRS.
Wow, this is fascinating.
Yes. And also, if you want to pass your citizenship to your children, that may also be affected if you're abroad and you're not complying and then they find out.
Well, this is great.
There are many consequences that you don't want to risk, I would say.
Right. This is all great information. Now, I also noticed from your website that you specialize in, visas? So if you are wanting to travel abroad, is that also within your practice area?
Correct.
All right,
what I do is that I process U.S. visas. I don't process international visas.
What does that mean?
So it's more of a U.S. immigration law. I don't specialize in international immigration because I don't have the license to practice in every country. Right now I have permission to practice in Europe, but as with international law.
All right.
Now, if I wanted to go to, I'm sorry.
Now I'm going to expose what a big idiot I am, but that's why I'm talking to you, so you can kind of educate me.
Yeah, no problem.
I need to travel more. And in fact, I want to travel more. We had plans to travel to Europe until the COVID thing happened. But
So
explain to me what you just said. So you practice in American visas, but not international. If I live in America and I want to travel internationally, can you help out with that? Or are you talking about you can help people traveling to America, getting a visa traveling
Correct.
To America? Okay.
Exactly. I help people to travel to the U.S. instead of the U.S. citizens to travel abroad.
I got you.
My field is for Americans who want to travel abroad, but in their tax matters.
Right.
But to international citizens who want to travel to the U.S. in both tax matters and in immigration matters.
Okay.
So let's say I specialize more. My client base is more concentrated on American citizens who also have partners or families that are from abroad.
Okay.
So this way I facilitate for them their taxes when they're living in their spouse's country, for example. And once they decide to move back to the United States, I process the visa for their spouses and I process their passports and social security numbers for their children, things like this.
Okay, so let's just say, someone lives in, let's just say, Germany or one of the European countries, and they want to travel to the United States for vacation. Would they need to get a visa?
If they're from Germany, they don't need what is called a visa, per se. What they need is to ask for a permission that is called ESTA.
Okay.
It's a very super easy document that can be filled out online. It's because the U.S. has, again, like treaties with these countries that are safer, let's call it like that,
right.
to travel to or from. And most of the countries in the European Union, if not all, already have this agreement with the U.S. that they don't need a visa to go to the U.S. They need this permission.
Okay, so how long does that take? Year,
it takes nothing. I mean, it can get processed in 2 days.
Okay, all right.
Or so, even less. Yes, it depends on the traffic on the website, but it's very easy.
So now let's say that I want to hire someone for my company. So I want to bring them from Germany to the United States to work. What kind of visa would that be?
Depends also on what grounds you're hiring them from. If you're hiring them for their specific set of skills, or if you're hiring them because they have extraordinary abilities. So it would all depend on what are the grounds that you're hiring them from for.
Okay, and how long does that process take?
That is much longer, especially because there's a lot that you have to prove so that you can bring that person, because you have to prove that no other American that lives in the U.S. already can do the work that that person is doing.
Yes.
So those take longer. They can take from 8 months to 12 months. And now,
really?
Because of the pandemic, they can take more than a year. Yes.
Wow. I actually had a case that involved that issue. I represented someone who was trying to work in America, and they were from Canada, of all places. You think, really having a problem coming from Canada to the United States? And her work visa expired, and I had to do what you just said. I was a fish out of water. I had no idea what I was doing, but we successfully navigated that issue. But that's fascinating to know. It could take up to 12 months. Now, the last scenario I want to throw at you is, let's just say someone in Germany wants to live in the United States. Is that even doable?
It is doable.
Okay, what kind of visa would that be?
Okay, so again, it would depend on what grounds you would want to move to the U.S. I always recommend or ask about have in the U.S., because that may facilitate the process. If a family member that's an American citizen or a already legal resident in the United States can request them to come to the U.S., also, there are student visas that maybe the person is interested in enrolling in a school or a program to study in the United States. They can use that to spend some time in the United States.
Right.
What happens with the student visa is they cannot work. So it has to be strictly for study reasons. There's also a fiancé visa. The person is already engaged to an American. The person has a spouse that is an American citizen. Obviously, the work visa, the person works for a company that has offices in the United States, that can also be arranged.
Okay.
And the extraordinary ability visa, which is something that you can just request by yourself, because you have these extraordinary abilities. If you're a Nobel Prize winner, or you've written articles on your field, you're this superstar on whatever you're doing. You can apply for this type of visa. Also, if you're an athlete or a singer, an artist, all these, I mean, it depends on what the person wants, but there are many options.
But again, I'm just going to highlight how idiotic I am, how stupid I am, but I'm learning.
No.
Is there for lack of a better term, a Kansas City Chiefs visa? In other words, you live in Germany, but man, you love the Kansas City Chiefs, and you would just love to live in Kansas City so that you could follow the Kansas City Chiefs. In other words, you want to move here for just any reason. You just like America. You like Kansas City. You like the food here. Can you get a visa just for that?
No. You have to have, I mean, if it's to move there, you could obviously go there for visitor reasons and go and tour all the cheese factories and enjoy your time there. But if you want to move to the United States, you have to have a permit to live there permanently.
Okay.
And there has to be more of a valid reason, especially because the U.S. is very interested in your economic impact on where you're going to grow in the community or wherever you move in the United States. So you have to come with a plan. You have to come supported by something economically. So you cannot just go to the United States and say, I want to live here and see how it goes for me, because they're going to make it much more complicated for you.
I am learning. I really do appreciate this. I am fascinated by your practice. I'm also fascinated by how you promoted your practice. Your website is incredible. And I assume
Thank you. I have to stress, by the way, my website, my husband did it. So
really?
The magician behind it, yes.
Wow.
He designed it completely. I mean, I gave him the ideas of what I wanted. As you mentioned earlier, I wanted a very clear, website that you could access all the information clearly without distractions or anything, but he's the mind and he did it all.
You married amazingly. Well. What can so I say?
I did. Thank you.
All right. Well,
he's a genius in what he does.
all right. Well, I really do appreciate your legal knowledge there. What is your website?
You.
I know it'll be on our show notes so that if people say, I want to get a hold of her for her, for visas or to find out my tax situation. I'm living overseas. How can people get a hold of you?
Exactly. Well, they can get a hold of me on my website, which is www.sabalierlaw.com. That is SABALIER.com.
Okay.
They can also contact me on my email, which is info@sabalierlaw.com. And I am on Instagram at Sabalier Law. I am on Facebook at Sabalier Law. And I'm also on LinkedIn at Sabalier Law. So you can find me anywhere.
And we are going to have all that information on the show notes for this podcast so people can reach you whenever they listen to this. But now I just got to know some my own personal things I'm fascinated by, and that is I want to travel internationally. And you are an international traveler. You've been to a lot of different places. Where would you recommend that I go?
Oh, my God.
In other words, what's the favorite place you've been?
Okay, the favorite place I've been, I have to say I love Spain, obviously, because okay. I've been there so many times. I have family there. My husband is from there, so his family. I've had an amazing time there. And Spain is a rich country. I mean, the north part looks like you're in Switzerland. The south part is just flamenco and jamón serrano and tapas and music. So you get it all there.
Right, right.
I also love Germany because of my experience here living in Berlin. I love Mexico. Mexico was an amazing experience for me. I went there to volunteer years ago, and the people there are just beautiful. They have this, beautiful hearts, and they're... The food is good. The drinks are good. The music is good. Everybody's happy all the time. And it's an amazing country. Where else? I love also, I'm thinking, I mean, you have to go to my country, Puerto Rico, of course.
That's right. Well, I've actually been to Puerto Rico.
It's super easy to travel there from the U.S. So.
You've got to send me because I want to travel to all those places. I want to travel to the south of Spain, also Mexico and Puerto Rico, which, by the way, Puerto Rico is the one place I have been to. Senior in high school, we went there on a work and witness trip.
Oh, wow.
And so I got to go to San Juan. The beach is amazing. I want to find just some nice house on a beach that you could rent for about a week to a month. So if you think of any great house ideas out there, a condo, I'll even take a condo, but I want somewhere on the beach that an American could go to, for about a week or a month. If any of those come up to your mind, please let me know. I'd love to check those out. All right.
Perfect. You mean in Puerto Rico or anywhere?
Anywhere. Again, the Mexico, Puerto Rico, or even the south of Spain, though that's going to be a little bit more pricier plane ride out there. But nonetheless, because Mexico and Puerto Rico would be a little bit easier to get to. But I'm telling you what, I have the cabin fever. I want to go. I want to get out.
Okay, nice. I will think about a place and I will send it to you afterwards. Okay. Because I have to think this right.
I would love, yeah. My son just left this morning to go down to the Virgin Islands and they rented a house on the beach.
Oh,
and
that sounds amazing.
It just looks like it's so much fun. Hey, do you have any thoughts on Puerto Rico's becoming a state?
Oh, I don't know. That's a difficult subject for us because we think that it might be good for the society in the terms that we may have finally some stability because
right.
we've been so many years in this limbo,
right.
legal limbo and political limbo. We're not a state, but we're also not an independent country. We're just a territory of the United States, whatever that means.
Right.
But it's difficult because we also have our pride of being Puerto Ricans, our own culture, our own language, which is Spanish. And we feel like by becoming a state, we might lose that. So it's difficult to
say.
I think that once the time comes, we are going to agree on something. But for now, we're all trying to figure out if this can actually work, what we have, or if there has to be a change.
So
because it's been too long.
If we were to take a poll of Puerto Ricans and say, do you want to become the 51st state in the United States? Do you think they would say yes or no?
Okay, I think that right now most of the people would say yes, because okay. there is this general fear of what we have around us, you know, becoming a very poor country or communist country like what we have next to us. I mean, right. love Cuba, but their situation is not ideal politically and economically. We also have a big fear of what happened to Venezuela and all these countries that are filled with a lot of violence and not a real stable society.
Good point.
So, and that is very near us. So it's difficult for people to make a line and say, no, if we are independent, we're going to be okay. Because what we see close to us is not ideal. But there's also that part that says, okay, this poll is not real. Nothing is going to happen with it. So people may vote just yes, because they know it's not going to really make a change. Right now, we've voted, I think, twice in the past, maybe 5 or 10 years. And the yes to become a state has won.
Really?
But it's because there's people, yes, people voting saying yes, and they know that that's not really going to make us a state.
Ah, I gotcha.
So it's them just making a statement. But I think once the time comes when it's a real question, a real poll, like, okay, a decision is going to be made based on this, people are going to think it more through.
Okay.
And it may not necessarily be a yes by so many votes.
All right.
I mean, as I told you, I think it will be more of a 50-50 because people are also proud of being Puerto Ricans and they want to keep their culture and all of that.
Interesting.
But
there is talk now.
The legal stability is needed.
There is talk now about making Puerto Rico the 51st state now that the Democrats mm-hmm. have control of the House
yes.
and the presidency. And if they get control of the Senate, at least that has been rumored out there as a possibility. So I was just curious about what the people in Puerto Rico actually thought about that issue. All right, lastly,
yeah.
this is probably the most important. What is your favorite legal movie?
My favorite legal movie? Wow. I would say, oh my God, I don't know, because when I was growing up, I watched lawyers all the time, but I
didn't know.
And most of them are men. So to me, it wasn't really, I didn't see them as I saw myself. I would say the one with Tom Norton. Which one is that I really like? It kind of marked me.
I'm drawing a blank on that one. Obviously, some people have. Now, what about, have you seen Legally Blonde? Care about, did you like that one? Not like that? Comedy.
Yeah, I like that movie, but and I wouldn't say that. It just as a funny movie.
Right.
lot of lawyers right now, I think, really thought of that movie as, you know, encouraging. But for me, I can say, no, it was not. I mean, I just thought of it as being a funny thing, but
nothing else. Right. Now, what about My Cousin Vinny? See, it's my position that My Cousin Vinny is by far and away the best movie of all time, let alone legal movie. I just love Marissa Tomei's character there. It's just comedy gold. Do you like My Cousin Vinny?
I liked it. But again, when I was in law school, we used that movie as a bad example of what you should not do in a trial. But it's funny because, again, I thought of it as a funny scenario that they just played in the movie and they weren't real. But I mean, it is a great movie. And I liked it. Yes, I can say I like that movie. But my favorite, I would have to say it's Primal Fear.
Primal Fear.
I think it's, yes, I think it's the one that really marked me off. Wow.
Really?
How a lawyer can really get involved with a client. Sorry. Yes.
That's the one with Richard Gere in it.
A lawyer can really get involved with a client and believe the client and even emotionally get marked by the person.
Right.
I mean,
that was a good movie. I do like. I'm trying to remember Primal Fear. I know Richard Gere was. I believe Richard Gere was in it. Is that am I thinking of the right movie? And the client who was also in Fight Club. I think I can't remember his name.
Exactly, it's Edward Norton.
Edward Norton. Okay.
Yes.
And whether or not he had a split personality, schizophrenic.
Exactly.
Were just brought along with that whole. That was a really good movie. That was.
And Richard Gere was defending him fiercely until the end of the movie, and you know.
Right.
It makes you really get into the character of Edward Norton and the client, and you get to feel his fears, his everything. You understand these actions, and then at the end, will you see what really happens?
Right. So, oh, that was a good movie.
It was a great movie. Yeah.
All right.
Well, now we can both watch it, I think.
Right. I'll watch it again. Well, thank you so much, Alexandra, for agreeing to be our guest today, and enjoy Berlin. So it is now, I think, 9 o'clock my time here in Kansas City in the morning. And is what time is it for
it's
you?
It's 4 o'clock here.
So you are just hitting the evening there.
Exactly.
All right. Well, Merry Christmas.
Getting colder by the minute.
Exactly. Merry Christmas. Have a happy new year. And thank you so much.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you very much for having me. And have a happy new year. You too.
All right. Thanks. Thank you for listening to today's podcast. If you enjoyed this podcast, please give us a 5-star review. We need your love to help us continue highlighting the funnier side of the law. I want to give a special shout out to our Vice President of Operations, Wendy Oster, without whom this entire operation would be a mess. Sean Wynn and 15.5 Features for making me sound way better than I actually do. Brooke Boland for spreading the good word about us. And Ryan Kuhn and Paul Kuhn of Triplicity Marketing for our technical and computer support.